Like, you know, you sat down, you paid for a ticket. You know that you're in for at least an hour.
Look, it's 1977. A lot of people are on drugs. They don't know what they signed up for.
They're not on enough drugs to watch this movie. I've been on drugs. I know drugs. I am drugs, sir. And
I am drugs, sir. Welcome, Applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Naomi McQuaid. And you know what movie we're doing? Because you clicked on the thing, you poor, poor bastards.
House. Not the TV show, but the 1977 horror film from Japan.
Not the House on Haunted Hill. Not Monster House, but House.
Not the horror movie that's from the 80s called House, either.
Oh, no. There's so many movies called The House. People are scared of living structures.
I would be scared of the housing market, too.
Not Monster House, the animated feature.
I love that movie.
That movie's real good. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to 1977, guys, where most of us weren't. And some of you might have been. Hey, how's it going?
Welcome, if you are listening in, person who was born before 1977.
Yeah, hey, you 45-year-olds.
It's the same year as A New Hope.
It is?
Yeah.
That's a year before Rocky Horror, right?
Rocky Horror was
75.
75, 2 years after.
Oh, this movie has a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah.
I'm not sorry. Sean, we're about to launch into your lovely... Okay, guys, Applauders.
Sean was the one who decided to go for House, which is great.
Sean suggested it. Lydia selected it. Let's be perfectly fair.
I don't feel bad about the selection. I really don't. Like, there's some things to really hate about this film. I'm not saying that it's a perfect film by any stretch, but come on. It's campy as
I'm going to give you time to make your arguments.
It's 1970s camp, late 1970s camp, which is bordering on 1980s camp.
This is also 3 years after Phantom of the Paradise.
Did Phantom of the Paradise make all its way to Japan?
Probably not. It's a Brian De Palma film. Maybe it did.
I would excuse a lot if I felt like there was an influence here. I don't feel like there's an influence here.
I feel like there's just the slightest bit of influence when it comes to, like, Rocky Horror. Like, I feel that in the beginning and towards the end with, like, the O turning into the lips and, like, some of the body parts, you know, just being very, like, upfront.
Hey, did you guys know that I had no idea, even after Sean suggested this film, what the hell this film was?
That's fair. It took me 3 viewings to come up with my final thesis on this film as to what this film was trying to say. Not unless it's a metaphor for something, and I don't see a lot of metaphor going around in it.
Yeah, this is just 4. There's no meta.
I think it's safe to say how we all came to this movie, and it was at the recommendation of our fact checker, Sean.
He was so excited. Like, he told me about how this film came to be no less than 2 or 3 times. And every time he started to tell me about the fabrication of the plot, there was this weird seizing of my entire brain as it, like, formed a solid mass and didn't want it to enter into me.
It was like burning
flames, on the side of my face.
True. Oh, okay. I think my feelings about this film are going to become abundantly clear as we go through the plot. So I'm cool with leaving myself there. Did you guys have some, like, initial entrance feels?
Because this is a movie that none of us have any background on. It was literally, like, just for the podcast.
It's real weird like that, because most of the time we suggest films to each other because we have some sort of history with it. Some, like, my favorite thing is when I'm like, hey, Lydia, have you seen this? And you're like, no. And I'm like, ha. And so, like, to have Shane ha to me hurts.
Shane or Sean?
Nope. Shane is a lovely man who, hey, if you guys have seen our new logos and stuff, that's all our friend Shane from Saturday Morning Tuesdays, and also the Infinite Backlog. So, like, check out Friends of the Podcast. But Sean's the one who suggested this, and I know that he gets a certain kind of glee from having subjected us to this, feelings about the film forthcoming.
As long as we're on the topic of updates and our podcast too, I'd also like to mention that Shocked and Applaud is the newest member of the Frolic Network.
Hey, Frolic, what's up?
Yay!
Which just means you have one more accessible way to find us.
So it's frolic.media.
So go on there, follow us, check out their other 38 podcasts and, like, you know, give it a look. They've got some really interesting podcasts on there.
Right. Just to name a few, Kingdom of Thirst is one of them. You might be wondering how we got here is another podcast. And K-Bay, which I believe they just talk about K-dramas on that one.
That sounds really good to get into. Yeah. Oh, also, we are like super on Podchaser. So if you found us there or if you have no idea what Podchaser is, go check them out. It's like Wikipedia for podcasts. And we'd love to be rated and to be followed.
Yeah.
No lie.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to say that it really doesn't change the format of us as of right now.
It did sound very pluggy, but like really, these are just fantastic people that we've, you know, partnered with, but not like y'all. The word mogul does not come into this. This is a hobby podcast that we get to share with people who have similar interests, and like, why wouldn't we mention them?
As of right now, we're still commercial free. We've got a couple of extra opportunities for guest appearances for us to be on other podcasts or possibly have others on ours. Although I haven't found somebody yet that really is up to a 5 to 6 hour movie viewing plus full month long recording.
Full disclosure, nobody does what we do. We have cornered a very, 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 very specific market.
Okay, to be fair,
probably not.
There's a pickle soda, like a pickled flavor soda out there, and that is also a niche market, but I wouldn't recommend it to others.
We are the Pickle Sodas of podcasting.
Pickle soda podcast. Jen looks so bewildered. Okay. All right. So, hey, we all got here the same way. We're going to walk into this burning house fire together, but maybe we go in with a little Sean facts.
Well, as you'd expect, there are quite a few details from Sean since he was the one that recommended this. Let's start out with a non-existent budget. We don't get to know the budget on this movie, but how about the box office for both Japan and North America?
Ooh, shall we guess?
I'm going to go with
1977. Are we doing 1977 money or now money?
This wasn't released in the North American territories for quite some time. I think it was around 2010 when we got the rights to actually screen it.
Look, I don't think it broke any piggy banks, y'all. I think we're still, I would say, box office between Japan and North America. If they busted through $2 million, I would be S-H-O-C-K-E-D'd. I hope I spelled that right.
Especially since that's a word in our podcast title.
Jen. Spelling things on the spot is not my forte.
I would say $2.15.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I got a bill for Amazon for our like domain registration services and stuff like that. And it's like very, very close to $2.15.
Can we frame that?
Yeah, I would 100% frame that. $2.15.
Box office, North America, limited release, $210,400.
Sorry, so I beat that by 10, so, 110% or something.
So it's more like $215,000 and 15 cents.
Back when tickets were a nickel.
That's still, you know, like not knowing the budget, if there was like a nothing budget, they probably got their money back in two locations. I mean,
there
like,
were so many actors on this and there was.
Yeah, but it's like 1977. They don't have to pay their actors that much. And
sorry,
some of them were teenage girls. So.
You get scale, and I want to see your boobs, so...
Yeah.
Box office for Japan.
Oh, that was just North America?
That was just North America. That's like the...
Oh, I'm still in the running. Take it, Liz.
Okay. That's closest pretty close to today's money. $210,000 would have been, in like 2010, is still $210,000.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, go. What's Japan, though?
$3.5 million.
I'm the closest without going
like,
over.
You're like Price is Right rules.
Pew, 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 pew. I'm going for that washer dryer combo, motherfucker.
Win at Plinko.
I would never win at Plinko. Never pick right. I never do. I'm like, there's no good math on this. And when the thing slides down, it's not good.
It's all probability, baby.
I aim for the bell curve and I end up on the outskirts. I'm an outlier by nature. That's what Shocked and Applaud is all about.
I want to create my own Plinko game and just be like, you want a prize? It's going to be a fun size Snickers.
I wouldn't be mad at that, considering the buy-in.
Yeah. But Plinko's just fun in general. It's a very satisfying game. Sorry, Jen. I completely interrupted you.
We have like 7 or 8 Sean facts to go through that are even before we get into scenes and stuff.
Okay, do it then. Do it. We might just let you do it. Go ahead. I'm going to not interrupt you.
That is shocking, S-H-O-C-K-E-D, shocked.
We might have to applaud it if it doesn't happen.
I can't remember how many P's go in applaud unless I'm writing it down.
All right. I'm going to butcher some Japanese names in this. So make sure you hop over to one of those really cheap-o vocal sayer websites to correct me later on. Maybe that's an editing note. Maybe I'll just insert some machine language or machine pronunciation messages on this.
Every time that you really butcher a Japanese name, or any of us do, you should... Oh, shit.
Sorry.
So I just went and saw Styx in concert, and so I wanted to make a Styx reference.
Go ahead. Go for
it. Every time you mess up a Korean name... Korean, damn. Every time you mess up a Japanese name, it should just be like...
I think that's extra racist.
Oh, okay. Strike that from the record. Go on.
Director's name is Nobuhiko Obayashi. And the film company Toho, the studio that made Godzilla, approached Obayashi with the suggestion to make a film like Jaws. Jaws had broken box office records, and they were hoping to have the same results in Japan, make some money. After the script was greenlit, the film was put on hold for 2 years because no directors at Toho were interested in directing the film as they felt it would end their career. Obayashi promoted the film during this time period until the studio allowed him to direct it himself. He made posters, business cards, a manga, a novelization of the script, a radio drama, and the complete soundtrack for the film, all created and released before the film was made. Eventually, the studio gave in because they had enough property, and the script was partly inspired by Obayashi's then 12-year-old daughter, Chigumi. She told him of a fear she had where the mirror she used would eat her. Obayashi sought her ideas, believing that adults only think about things they understand. Everything stays on the boring human level, while children can come up with the things that can't be explained. And none of the 7 actresses who portray the group of friends who visit the house were trained film actresses. Probably reduced the budget some, definitely, by doing so. The young ladies were models who had worked with director Obayashi making advertisements and commercials. The country music singer Kiyohiko Ozaki, who plays Mr. Togo in the film, was cast because he was friends with Obayashi through their shared hobby of horseback riding. Other roles were filled by members of the crew and their families. For example, Nobuhiko Obayashi's daughter Chigumi plays the little girl, and the film's production designer plays the shoemaker. I don't remember either of those roles.
The shoemaker is the guy in the weird musical scene.
So it's right when Mr. Togo is about to leave for the train station?
Yeah, it screams boy band, American boy band, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Obayashi desired the special effects to look unrealistic. Pass there, buddy. You definitely got it.
Succeeded there, guy.
Check mark.
That takes a lot out of the budget.
As if a child created them. For the scene in which Ai Matsubara's character vanishes under the blood, that would have been Prof. That was her. Obayashi had her suspended nude, pouring buckets of blue paint on her to create a blue screen chroma key effect where the blue colored parts of her body would deteriorate on camera.
Deeply disdainful.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Did you just say yeah to me being mad? Okay, well, this podcast is going to go so good right now.
Page 2.
I love you, Sean, so much. Can I just say that? I do. I do love Sean. Like, I would hot coals walk across for Sean. Interruption number 2, sorry.
The outcome of a lot of these effects would be unknown until the film was completed. Obayashi stated that sometimes the effects didn't turn out how he originally envisioned them. another green check mark there, buddy. I don't think anybody expected what you put out there. All right, here's some good award discussion for you. Screen Rant ranked the film at number 9 in their list of the 16 best Japanese horror movies of all time.
Yeah. Say that again.
Number 9 of the 16 best Japanese horror movies of all time, Screen Rant.
Look at me not interrupting.
Look at how hard you're not interrupting.
Name one other Japanese horror film.
I don't think The Grudge counts, does it? The Ring?
Ringu. Yes. That would be the Japanese equivalent of it.
So you've named two.
Yes, and technically this isn't House, it's Houseu. Bloody Disgusting included the film in the 20 all-time best haunted house horror movies, stating that the film takes the haunted house concept to wacky extremes.
Wacky extremes!
This movie was a commercial success in Japan, like we just discussed. However, it was never formally released in America and was only shown in theaters in a few film festivals starting in 2009. It wasn't until a DVD release in 2010 that the film began to grow a cult following. And finally, the director won the Blue Ribbon Award for Best New Director in 1978. And the rest is all scene language discussion stuff that we can get into later.
Did you have any gen facts you wanted to share with us?
This movie is terrible. Can't even afford an E in there. Just terrible.
Jen, we can't gang up on Lydia. That's not how this podcast
works.
First of all,
Sean Hall is part of this podcast.
Oh, that's true. So it's 2-2, really?
2-2. Madeline, if you're listening, you were the deciding vote.
I didn't say it wasn't good. In its own right, I think that there is, in retrospect, there are a lot of films that this reminds me of. Most similarly, I would say Evil Dead comes to mind. But this is like Hard Day's Night meets Evil Dead.
Naomi's face when you said, it reminds me of Evil Dead in some ways. And she was just like, Jen,
goat meme? You know the angry goat? That's what I just channeled. That goat who's just like,
so I got your goat then. Thankfully, I said all those things while you were under the supposed law of non-interruption.
I did pretty good considering that I want to scream all the time. I think. I mean, here's the thing. I'm up for relative moralism. I
like the way that a goat screams like a human.
Except it'd be like, house!
Do you have any more Sean facts for us?
No, just scene-related stuff that I can pop in
Okay. Before you said mention that you had some Gen facts, but I'm cool.
Oh, well, I mean, I've got, like, actresses' names and characters' names those that Sean didn't list out, but...
No, I appreciate that, because I was looking at the end credits, and I was like, I can't write this fast, so that's good.
So I'll just butcher a whole bunch of those when we get into, like, the intro scene where it's basically, like...
Oh,
Full House.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll get there. Okay.
Okay.
Full House, by the way. House, by the way.
It's 1977. You have decided to watch a movie called something not enigmatic, something very plain and straightforward. You understand the concept of what a house is.
Okay. But like you say you decide to watch a movie and then the movie says a movie.
Why does the title card say a movie? Like, you know, you sat down, you paid for a ticket. You know that you're in for at least an hour.
Look, it's 1977. A lot of people are on drugs. They don't know what they signed up for.
They're not on enough drugs to watch this movie. I've been on drugs. I know drugs. I am drugs, sir. And
I am drugs, sir.
A movie. And then it goes, Hosu.
And isn't there like an eyeball and a mouth because the O becomes a mouth?
Yeah, no, the O in house becomes a toothy O mouth, and then it becomes like lips, and then it goes back to toothy O mouth after it says, it literally says to you, house. There's no way to say it that doesn't sound racist, because
we're white people. We're also Americans.
Yes, and here's one of the interesting things about any Asian dialect that pronounces English words is that you often leave off a syllable or you put a U-ish sounding at the end of the word. So like we'd say house and very like succinct, right? But Haosu, it makes... I've been watching SNL skits. Have you seen that Japanese show parody on SNL?
Is it the one where they're like, they like bring on this Japanese professor and he's totally justifying his...
Yeah, you don't understand. He's got the Japanese studies professor and he's just like, you don't understand Japanese culture. You are literally my worst students.
Mm-hmm.
That's us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, they're, but like...
It's parodying the people that you went to high school with who always, like, ended their someone's name with, like, Chan or Kun.
Yeah, or, like, the end of a word. Like, no. Yeah. I feel bad. That feels bad.
Yeah.
So, like, they're going to do that several times throughout this film as we go through. And I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad. This is a foreign film. And anytime we do that, this is the most foreign film that we've ever covered. We've done Howl's Moving Castle. Don't listen to that one. Listen to Never Ending Stories better. Just listen to that one. Okay, but like when you're covering a different culture, speaking in their native language, but then they use so many American words.
Right. And these aren't just necessarily like, you know, kind of thrown in there. Okay, not to make it seem like when you watch something from Japan and an English word is said, it's thrown in there. It's generally put in there with purpose. In this case, all of the English words that are put in there are put in as names to people. Like the opening shot is, I put my note, witchy camera shoot. Because it's a witchy photo shoot. You got this like girl who's got like she like kind of covers up a little bit, and mm-hmm. she's got like these beakers, like this alchemist.
But then it cuts kind of back and forth because then it's like, oh, it's so hot, you better get the picture. Mm-hmm. And it's two schoolgirls doing like a photo shoot together, and I'm sure it has some sort of grander purpose, like one of those festivals you see in like animes where they're like end of school like festival pictures,
right?
Like they happen to be doing a photo shoot at the end of school. It's foreign to me, so like I don't know, like there's a lot of stuff we're just taking off the cuff, but I don't want it to be dismissive of culture, but like this film is not set up for me to be able to understand it with my Western brain,
right? And they're just, you know, taking photos probably for some specific purpose that we as Americans can't understand. You have Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And she is essentially the main character, and they call her Gorgeous throughout the entire...
People's names is what they is.
And the lady who's taken the photos is named Fantasy. And that she's the one who's like, you looked like a witch back there.
In Japanese, they call her Fanta,
mm-hmm.
which is a soda for me.
This is how far removed we are from this movie.
Yeah, sorry, guys. So, like, let's go. Hey, dive head first into this rabbit hole, because what?
Whee! But only enjoy yourself.
Okay, so it's too hot and the photos are taken, and then they pop out of this, I hate using the word vignette too much, but they have this scene that they're doing, and Gorgeous comes out of it and she's patting herself dry, and she's Fantasy's like, oh, it's such good pictures, and Gorgeous is like, oh, you take good pictures, and like it's this girly back and forth that is so separated from who I am as a person and how I interacted with other ladies, even at that age. We assume they're somewhere between 16 and 18 years old-ish, but we don't have a clear number because I'm probably sure I would screech into a hole in the ground if I knew.
This is a movie in 1977, but you can very, very easily see that this was directed by a man. Like, I'm not... Look, I'm a white woman in America, so I'm not trying to degrade...
A modern white woman in America.
A modern white woman in America. So I'm not... Like, look, what is that? Over 30 years removed from when this movie was done. So I'm not trying to throw any shade.
It's near 50 years.
50 years? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. 2000 was yesterday, but...
My goodness.
Yeah, we're...
Ow.
Actual math. Hold on a second. 23 plus it's 21.
It's like... It's like 45 years. It's like over 45 years, because it would be like full on 50 years in 2027. That's good. That was the right math. Anyway, so like this is a movie that is 44 years my senior. Also, it takes place in a completely different country that I have no studies on.
Yeah. So as we go through the plot, please recognize we cannot. We won't be able to. Mm-mm. We can only do it through our own lens of self. And that's not... That's kind of the...
At some point, they make a bathroom toilet paper joke, and I only know it through one specific lens, and it has to do with a video game.
Is it the Legend of Zelda game that we talked about in the last episode? The one that Shandytown played through on Twitch? Yes.
Okay. We'll get to it.
Hey, okay. So
basically, like, these are teenage girls who are written and voiced through the ideas of an older man in their culture. Again, this was like 45 years ago. So if you want to say that, oh, it was a different time and place, I'll be like, okay, I guess if that's the only, but that's the only leg you're standing on.
Look, high school children being mm-hmm. like embodied in this way in all of the, let's face it, like between us, like anime, I talked about it with Shane, who also I mentioned earlier.
Right.
He, like, they're children. And so it's hard when they're sexualized or like presented in an adult way to like come back to the fact that these are babies.
These are babies.
Basically fetuses.
Yeah.
So
they do not have, their brains are still forming.
Yeah. So we have to step away from that and let it be what it is after we acknowledge these facts. They did in front of a PE teacher, we think.
Yeah. Well, they okay, so as they come out of this photo shoot, they're talking back and forth and everything, and they get like this PE teacher that comes up. So like Gorgeous is talking to Fantasy about her, you know, oh, you like Mr. Togo, who's, you know, like your boyfriend and everything and blah 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 blah.
So that's not true because Togo's with somebody else, and then they're like,
well,
you're gonna go away to your dad's for a weekend, and like, oh, are you talking about the PE teacher?
The PE teacher is engaged to someone else, and she's specifically in an arranged marriage. We don't know if it's with Mr. Togo or not, because like, there's this whole idea with Fantasy, like she almost seems like she like has this huge crush on their teacher, Mr. Togo.
Gross.
Yeah, but like, also not trying to discredit the feelings of a teenage girl. I had crushes on my teachers when I was in high school, and I'm like, looking back on it, a lot of my celebrity crushes also were like 10 years older than me, and I was like, oh, I look back on it and I cringe about myself. So like, I'm not trying to like put her down for that, because I totally relate in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it's still like, they play up the fact that with Fantasy, Mr. Togo is, you know, her boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, that handsome guy, that swat. Okay, that we're gonna get to that. So then we see the one PE teacher. We see her for this one scene, and she's like, "Ah, oh, Summer." She stares off into the distance, mm-hmm. and then we have Gorgeous and Fantasy dancing down the steps in this monkeys. You know, do you remember the intro to the monkeys?
Yeah.
So it's just like, hey, we're the monkeys. People just it's like to a different song. And Jen said it best. Mm-hmm. It was like Schlemiel, Schlemazel, Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated as they like dance to with each other down these steps. It's overly familiar and really dumb looking, and it almost infantilizes teenage girls' relationships.
Agreed. I would say it kind of like turns them more into like baby children instead of like, you know, almost adult children.
Yeah.
But there's also like this moment where they start spinning around, and I was thinking, are they supposed to be like, you know, friends or like more than friends?
No, I don't think that is the case.
It could be wrong. No, I could be wrong.
It shows an intimacy level that we in the States don't embrace.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. But they do expound that Gorgeous is supposed to go away with her dad to their estates, and then Fantasy is going to go away with Mr. Togo and his fiance and the rest of the girls to his sister's house. And then they both part ways. And then we can go to the second scene, which is equally, if not more, dumb.
True. So Gorgeous comes home after being told that she was going to go over to go out with her dad.
And her subtitle says daddy, but she screams papa.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
But in the end, she like goes over and she runs into her dad's arms, and he scoops her up and he like twirls her around.
Holds her in his own whole own. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the way that you pick up, like, it's the way that you see a knight in shining armor for Western audience.
Mm-hmm.
The way you see a knight in shining armor coming up and picking up the princess and carrying her out of the bad guy's castle.
Like Andre the Giant picks up Buttercup
when she falls out of the window. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. But it's like bad. That. It's bad. Because it's like a weirdly romantic gesture to us. And here's the thing. I remember the last time I got picked up by my parent. I know this is therapy for all of us, but I remember the last time, and he turns to me and he goes, did you twist your ankle? And I was like, no, I think I'm okay. And he dropped me.
The last time I got picked up by my dad, he picked me up like on the side because I had shattered like a dish in the kitchen, and he was picking me up to make sure that I didn't step on broken glass. But he picked me up from like the side and waddled me over. Because even as like a 13-year-old, I was still too heavy to pick up.
No, that's okay. I think I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
I was like real young.
And then my parents never picked me up again.
You know, they say that you never, they say there's that meme that's like, there was a time your parents picked you up and never picked you up again, and you didn't recognize how special it was. And I was like, I specifically remember being knocked on my ass close to the undertow. And my dad was like, oh no.
I can still pick up my nieces and nephews. Well, one of my nieces, all of my nephews, I kept telling them the last time I saw them, you know, there's going to come a day when someone's going to pick you up and they're going to put you down and they're never going to pick you up again. And I don't think it's sunk in how devastating that can be. So I like, but I'm still strong enough to where I can pick them up and let them know, hey.
I admire that about you. I was telling Jen over the weekend that like, we get real heavy, real young as children in my family, and it's about 4 or 5 years old where they don't pick you up anymore.
Oh.
And that's fine, because you top 50 pounds or whatever. And yeah, nobody, like the majority of people cannot. But the fact that he sweeps her up and he's just like, oh, my darling. Oh, okay. So here's the thing. We can't go to where you want to go. No, I want to go where you want to go, but my new fiance is coming. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, yeah, you're going to get a new mom. And she's like, mom? And then he's like, and here she is. And Ryoko walks in. And Ryoko's like, yes. She's like, oh, does it not?
Her walk in is like slow-mo. She's got this like scarf and it's a blowing in the wind.
It's garbage. If you see it and you don't go, turn around. Every now and then I have a stupid scarf that I give to my stepdaughter. Turn around. I freaking hate Ryoko because she's only in like 3 scenes from now. Ryoko's bad. She's a female character who's portrayed real sorely. Fucking hate Ryoko. I don't. She's a beautiful woman. She doesn't seem bad. She seems like a very genuine woman. But also, like, if you tossed her in the trash, if you replaced her with not even a sexy lamp, if she was a string light from Target's reject aisle with like 3 burnt out bulbs, you'd be like, I guess it brings some light to the situation, but I don't see how it's very helpful.
Ah! A string light. Oh my goodness. And like, because she really doesn't have, she's only there to kind of like spur Gorgeous into like the scene after this is essentially like, I'm going to bully, or she's like thinking wistfully about her life with her father.
What about her mother, who's only been dead 8 years?
Right.
Which is an entire lifetime for a high schooler.
Right. And so she's just like, this is the worst thing. This is the worst thing. I'm going to bully my father. I hate him.
Yeah.
And like,
BS on her dad for being like, here's my girlfriend. PS, my fiance. PS, she's your mom now.
So when my dad got remarried, like less than 5 years ago, he pretty much kind of dropped this ball on me in the same way that Gorgeous had.
No.
Yeah, it was like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm getting remarried.
Like, you didn't know her before then?
I didn't know her before they announced their wedding. I knew of her, but I never met her.
Did you know they were together?
No, because they were not together, because my dad is like super religious in a Christian sense. And it was like they couldn't really date. It's more like you're friends with someone, friends, and then you go ahead and just decide, yeah, this is someone that I'll go ahead and.
It's a very Christian thing to.
Yeah, to be
like a hardcore Christian thing to say.
You two
I date with the intention of marriage, and they skip the children part of that?
No, they I wouldn't say that they even dated. They were friends for like 2 years.
Ooh.
And then my dad started like seeing her as like the way that my dad says it is that God opened his eyes. Sorry, but essentially he said that God opened his eyes and now this woman is someone that he thinks he can marry. She agreed with that whole idea, but they went on mission trips together to Africa. And so they knew each other for like a solid 2 years. And there's a part of me that's like, just one day my dad's like, yep, I'm getting married. And I'm like, okay.
You okay? You wait. Okay. Like, what?
But here's the thing. Even though he did drop it on me like that, he didn't say, and she's going to have to be your new mom. He was like, she's just here for me. I'm not expecting her to be your mom.
Adult children.
Right.
And step parents are different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good, because I've had a couple since becoming an adult, and it's really great to call them stepdad. Builds intimacy. Very nice. But I never thought of them as my father.
Right. I can totally relate to everything that Gorgeous is going through. Like, when you hear that the first time, I don't know if this is something you went through, but for me, because my mom had died like 8 years before they got remarried, there's a part of me that's like, all I can think about is my mom. All I can think about is everything that I went through that year before she died. And there was like a lot of stuff going on with me. I was growing in a lot of ways. But when my mom got sick, it's like she got sick and then 6 months later she died.
That's very fast.
Yeah, very fast. And then like 6 months after she died. But here's the thing. I want to make this very clear and I do not blame my dad for it. 6 months after my mom died, my grandma, his mom, my dad's mom, died too. And then like 3 months later, my mom's dad died. It was like 2010 was a f***ed up year for me.
Yeah.
But anyways, that being said, I totally understand Gorgeous being frustrated, but I do not endorse her saying that she hates her dad.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Because I mean, there's so much to do there. We are under the assumption that the only trauma that she's really suffered at this point is the loss of a parent.
Right.
When she was super duper, effing duper young.
Yeah.
And that is different than having the upheaval of trauma that gets shoveled on. Hey, applauders. This is Naomi. I'm going to talk to you directly. I assume that you are similar in age or quite a bit younger or quite a bit older. I don't know. If it works the right way, your parents go before you. And that's unfortunate and it sucks. But then there are people who are older that are your parents who have to go on after that. And there's no right way for that to happen. There's no perfect way. You're going to have to learn to deal with it. And I wish there was some beautiful poem, and I'm sure there might be. I don't read a lot of poetry. But like, we learn to move on as humans. You have to. I mean, like, there's going to be tomorrow. And what does that look like? Do you want the people you love to be lonely? No.
Right.
Right. And that comes with a set of consequences. That comes with a huge set of changes. And we look at Gorgeous, and I assume he named her that because her mom seemed much more lovely than that.
The director named her that, first of all.
That's true. But like, we're looking at a child dealing with what a man interprets, her interpretation of this event is going to be.
Right.
And that, as myself, who has experienced loss, that's not what it looks like for me. And it's not what it looks like for Jen or Lydia or all of you extending out into the ethos. Like, we hope that we act more maturely. But for the sake of observing this film, she is a child who is experiencing some sort of trauma that we would think would look better after 8 years. But she's like, Dad, I want to fix your elbow cuffs. I want to darn your socks. She's like, I took on my mother's role and now you're ousting me with this pretty, pretty girl who tried to put a scarf on me.
Right. And like, not to beat up on a fictitious character.
Let's do. She's fictitious.
When this happens, she remembers her dad's like, no, you don't have to do all those things for me. And so like, that's where the cuffs come in. And she's just like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And she runs off dramatically.
Throws the scarf behind her.
And there is like a freeze frame on the scarf.
The freeze frames on this movie are absolutely painful.
But I love them. And then she runs over into her room. And as soon as she shuts the door, we see this like full on rose pattern on her
walls. I love her wallpaper.
Yeah.
I can fault a lot on this film, but her wallpaper is amazing. Can you explain her facial expressions for me?
First of all, she comes into the room and then she looks kind of sad, but then it turns into a smile. And I think of it as like, considering what she says next. So basically, I'm just going to let you know what she does, applauders.
But does she spin first?
She comes into the room and she looks sad, but then she smiles and then she spins. And her dress and her school uniform is out and she's in this floral like summer dress.
Yes,
because
why?
They're on summer vacation.
Of course.
And then she starts looking at all of these pictures and she's like, Father disappointed us. I'm going to bully him. I hate him. And she's looking through these pictures and then she starts etching them out.
She holds up a flower and she grabs a picture and she's having like, have you ever just grabbed a flower and held a black and white picture and was like, oh yes, dead mother.
What were you saying about this movie passing the Bechdel test?
She no, she's talking about a dude. This is not where she passes.
No, it's not. But it's still like, you know, written, and it's sort of like, anyway, sorry,
I'm
but
about
like,
a dude.
Oh my goodness, she's so angry at her dad for trying to find some happiness in his life that like she can't grapple with the fact that he just wants to get remarried. So
she's laying on her bed having a conversation with her dead mother. And I find that deeply disturbing because although I do find myself talking to my father, it's very much in my head. And it's very much like, oh, I should send a text of this where I'm at to my dad. He would very much like that I was here right now. And then I'm like, oh, no, he doesn't have a number anymore. So I can't send him a picture of this. And that's sad. Mm-hmm. But then I think, you know what? He would be glad that I was experiencing this right now, you know?
Whenever I see shorter, chubbier, gray-haired ladies at the store, but I catch them from the back, I automatically think they're my mom. And then there's this little pain, and then I'm like, Mom, oh no.
Yeah. My dad used to go out of town all the time, and he'd go up for months at a time. Since he's only been gone since March, I keep thinking, oh, he's going to come back from Puerto Rico. Oh, yeah. He's going to come back from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think, you know, I've for years have been putting off, sharing this thing with him until then.
Right.
And it kind of stings.
Talking more about dead parents than we are about this movie. I think that says something.
There needs
about
to be more dead people that we can talk about. Okay, so the wallpaper is amazing. There's bat. Oh, there's that photo montage.
Yeah, and then at the end of it, she starts crossing out his face.
Yeah, it's like it's like good photo, bad photo, and then all of a sudden, cuts to her like being like, "Dad sucks," and she like starts crossing out his face, and I'm like, "What did he do?"
She's kind of happy about like, "Oh, he's just so mean. We're just going to have to like, I just hate him." She specifically says, "I'll bully him. I hate him," but she says it in a happy way. So it's like, "I'll bully him. I hate him."
Uh huh. So then we go back to school.
Yeah, just a random cut back to the school.
Well, because now we need to be introduced to the entire cast of Lady Girl.
Right. And so they're like, there's these teenage girls who are like, you know, hanging out next to a statue.
We got Gorgeous, who we already know.
Oh, not yet.
Not yet.
Not
but
yet.
But we got Mac.
Yeah.
We got Professor.
Mm-hmm.
We got Melody.
Mm-hmm.
We got Kung Fu.
Yeah.
We got Fantasy.
Yeah.
We got Sweet.
Yeah.
Not in that order.
Right. And Melody's like holding a guitar, but she's holding it all wrong. And then like later they're talking about how they're going to all like these are all of the girls who are going to go away with Fantasy and Mr. Togo to Mr. Togo's sister's place.
Uh-huh.
But this is like where you meet them. And this is like archetypes. The movie.
I hate it a little bit because like, OK, so we haven't gotten to the part where Jen's going to introduce us to all of them. They're having a discussion about Mr. Togo.
Right.
And they're back and forthing about how handsome he is and how talented he is and how much Mr. Togo.
He's just so great.
Well, he rolls in on a motorcycle, right? And he's all like, bad news, girls. My sister's having a baby, so we can't go to her house. And I'm like, you didn't know your sister was. It's not she's having the baby right now. My sister's in hospital because she's having the baby
right now.
No, he says she's going to have the baby. So I imagine she's 9.5 months. But honey, you would have known more than 2 months ago.
Here's the thing.
Why?
Here's the thing. Either his sister is just found out she had a baby, or he's just like, can't be around her. She's too moody.
No.
Or she was like, or like he knew that it was like 2 months away. There's always the possibility that this baby's going to be coming. And turns out this baby's coming. That's not my point. My point about this whole scene is not the fact that Mr. Togo looks like a schlub. And apparently he's a country singer. So maybe that's the wrong thing to
mutton
say.
Mutton chops. And, give him a degree 5 out of 10 face.
You've reached the conclusion of part one of our review of 1977's Japanese horror film, House of Plotter. We're excited to deliver you what is going to be one of the most insane plot walkthroughs yet, and can't wait to bring you all of our hot takes for every scene along with our shocked and applaudable moments. As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Shocked and Applaud is now part of the Frolic Network, and we've got some great suggestions to introduce you to our newest friends. Kingdom of Thirst delivers history, hot takes, author interviews, and deep dives into romance novels every Wednesday. It's 100% NSFW, but they super duper promise it's not all willies. And Jeff and Will's Big Gay Fiction podcast is perfect for avid readers and passionate fans of gay romance fiction. Each week, they bring you exclusive author interviews, book recommendations, and explore the latest in gay pop culture. Check out links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and the uncredited 8th school girl named Lupus, Jen. Sorry, that was a really deep House MD cut. Did you know that we've released a new version of our website? You can now sign up to receive email notifications when we release a new episode, and we've made it much easier to review us, search for those long-lost episodes in our back catalog, and even leave us a voice message. Why not check out shockedandapplaud.com and look around? We'll be back in 1 week for part 2 of our review of this Japanese cult classic. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.